KPC LP, Petaluma, California.
Hey there, Petaluma. I'm Dominic Delvin, host of Origin Stories. Every week, we examine the DNA of hip-hop classics, focusing on the songs that were sampled to make the songs that we love. Tune in to hear the jazz, funk, soul, and rock that make up the best of today's rap music. Tuesdays from 10 to noon.
Good morning. Here we are. This is Inside Petaluma. We're on KPCA 103.3.
Can you hear me?
In Petaluma. There we go. And hold on, we have a minor technical difficulty. What?
I'm only hearing you this way.
Okay, so maybe your mic needs to be turned on.
Or a change.
All right. Can you hear yourself?
Is it the headset?
It's the headset.
Oh, we're changing headsets
now. I can hear.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Thank you. So I think we're okay. This is Jason Davies, and I'm filling in as the host, as you can hear. I'm not quite as smooth as our normal host. Cindy Thomas couldn't be with us. She's enjoying Mexico right now, which is totally cool. Probably much warmer down there. And we have today, Janice Cater-Thompson is our co-host. And we are on KPCA 103.3, Petaluma, California. This is InsidePetaluma.com. I'm Jason Davies, and we have a special guest that we're going to be talking with in a few minutes. To start off our show, we like to talk about a few local things first. Janice, were there some things you wanted to mention?
Well, I just wanted to mention that I was at the mosquito abatement, building this morning. And they are willing to come on as guests in March.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we can talk about, you know, how people in their homes can protect their areas from mosquitoes and talk about the wastewater plant also. Because, you know, there's times when it's closed down because of mosquitoes. And it was really great going there and talking with Eric this morning. And so we'll be setting that up. I'm also going to be going to Davis today. But I'm actually going to Dixon for a funeral, and it's for Betty Wiley. There was Felix and Betty Wiley. He was a World War II military man, and they moved to Petaluma, like a lot of people did after, you know, when Hamilton closed down. So many people moved to Petaluma. Well, Felix died about 5 years ago, and Betty died this last year. And so I'm going to go to their service. They were old friends of my parents, but they mentored young Democrats.
Hmm.
And they worked with, like, Matt McGuire, David Keller, myself, and wow. Pam Torliette and others. And so it's really nice to have, you know, people that you respect and mentored. And when you would go in their house, it's really interesting. They had a picture of John Kennedy, that picture when he was standing sideways. And you're just really thinking.
Hmm.
And, you know, you look at that generation and how he was so important to them. And yet in our generation, it was John Kennedy, but it was also Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you look at the differences, and it's always good to have people that are your mentors. And then the other thing is just about Natalie Corona, the officer that was killed in Davis. My kids live there and live very close to where this happened.
Mm.
It's a really sad day for that community. And my daughter works in the hospital there, and so she, you know, had other information, and she was working that day, even though the officer was taken to Davis because of her injuries. And it's just really unfortunate when things like that happen, but it was a man that was mentally ill, and it was really close to the downtown park. And so on March 1st, I talked with Katie Swan of Buckaloo, and she's going to be coming in and speaking, and I'm hoping to get Officer Saldano, who worked with homeless people and mentally ill people in Petaluma, so we can actually have a conversation about this.
Great. Wow.
So that happened. And then, let's see, today we're going to be talking about the Women's March and other things, but, you know, as far as, like, things in the paper, we can go over that as time goes on. But why don't you go ahead and – that's pretty much it for me, Jason.
Great. Thanks, Jess.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We are excited to have with us on our program today – our new mayor, Mayor Teresa Barrett. Thank you for joining us today, Teresa.
Thank you, Jason and Janice.
It's great to have you here.
Yeah, well, we've been trying to get her on for quite a while. We've had we had a couple of the other new candidate, or rather, newly elected council members come on. But we were really excited to have Teresa. Let's just start by just going a little bit into your background. I know that before you got involved in the council, Your profession involves some research at the Rand Institute. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, I'm just going to make a minor correction, and that's the Rand Corporation. The Rand Institute is actually part of their graduate school
program.
Oh,
thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. And it is probably what more people are aware of who are, looking at college degrees. I think Joe Nation, who we all might
That's
remember
right.
as
exactly.
a former assemblyman, yeah. he got his PhD at the Rand Institute. But I was not associated with the Rand Institute. I just want to make that clear. And my association with Rand was in the beginning of my my post-university time. And I graduated from graduate school at UCLA and went to work at the Rand Corporation, initially working in a multi-year housing program that Rand put together for what used to be the Housing and Urban Development Department of the government. And we worked on the supply end of the program. There was a supply, a demand, and a survey section to this program. And the group that I worked with was on the supply end, and we were looking at how can the government provide housing that is affordable for people all over the country without the problems that grew out of the project approach, the mm-hmm. brick-and-mortar approach to housing, which had been the previous government policy. And so the idea was to choose two cities which were very different from one another, in which they would have a supply experiment. People would be going out and renting houses on their own with what were vouchers, essentially. And then we would see what effect that would have in terms of actually meeting the supply demand,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not it was sufficient, and if how much the vouchers had to be. It was really basically a huge 5-year experiment.
Wow.
And unfortunately for that experiment, it took place at the same time as the hyperinflation of the Carter years, mm-hmm. the
so
Ford Carter
the
70s. Years.
19% interest.
Late 70s, yes. So that was a real problem. And the area, but it did continue through those 5 years, but the inflation had a real effect on how it worked. But they got a lot of information about the use of vouchers that I think many people are aware of as like Section 8 vouchers,
right.
where housing has to meet certain standards before it can be subsidized, the rent can be subsidized. But the people who are using the subsidy go through the community and look for it.
Right.
I think all of us realize it hasn't been very successful,
yeah.
and that's important to know. I mean, an experiment doesn't have to be a success in
right.
order to teach us something.
So we do have some Section 8 housing here in Petaluma, correct?
Very, very little.
Yeah.
There's never enough Section 8 housing throughout the entire county, or anywhere, actually. And that's part of what our problem is in terms of not having sufficient low-income housing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when people, with the fires and lack of housing, I've known people that are trying to get out of their Section 8, housing that they offer people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real problem in this area with
yes.
the cost of rents and buying.
So you did a lot of data analysis there. And then you also worked a bit with technology transfer analysis?
Yes. After a few years, I was at the Rand Corporation for 5 years. And as I said, I started on the housing assistance supply experiment. And then I switched from the domestic side to the Air Force side and did a year and a half of work with the whole idea of technology transfer. A lot of times and this is done a lot now with corporations, when they want to have something built more cheaply, they license their products to another company, mm-hmm. and then they can produce it in Taiwan or, Mexico, wherever.
Outsourcing.
Yes. When I was studying it, it was much more of a political decision because governments that wanted to buy American military jets or things of that nature, or avionics packages, wanted also to be able to have that work in their own countries. So this was sort of a give and take that the United States was willing to have those products made in those countries in order for those countries to buy our equipment.
Interesting.
So the question became whether or not it was a security issue or not.
Right.
You know, what can we transfer and what will happen? Well, and now we all know about, you know, how the Chinese have,
right,
you know, had those kinds of contracts with private corporations and then just, you know, pirated their,
yes,
their technology. Right. So that was one part of what I studied. And the other part of what I did on that at that period was work on prototyping. And this was prototyping systems design with the idea that competition would be the way that the military could get their pricing down on their production. And while that, this was also not unlike the housing supply experiment, that while that showed, yes, competition would be helpful, it was, competition was always trumped by the political decision to keep unproductive lines open in St. Louis when it's a McDonnell Douglas contract, or in L.A. when it's a Lockheed contract. So it wasn't a decision made by what's good and what is economically feasible. It was, decisions were made by what was politically tenable.
Well, isn't that the case
eye-opening lessons were learned by this young researcher at that time, yes.
Wow. Well, it's good that you're familiar with the data analysis, because that's obviously critical for making good decisions on the city council. And you've been in Petaluma now for
40 years.
40 years. Wow. And where were you before that?
I was in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Nice.
After I went down to UCLA for graduate school and stayed there for 9 years when I continued to work for RAND. And then I left that and moved up to Petaluma.
You ever miss
good choice.
Santa Monica?
I still have some very, very close friends down there, and just spent New Year's Eve down there visiting those friends.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, my sister lives down in the L.A. area, and we had a good time visiting her and walking around Santa Monica. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I would say that my experience in Los Angeles may be different from many others, because in the 9 years that I lived there, I was when I first went to UCLA, I was able to take the bus to and from school.
Oh,
and
that is very different.
Yes, and, and then when I worked at the RAND Corporation, I was able to walk to work. So that was, you know, I wasn't car dependent, and that, and I lived very close to the ocean, so that was nice as well. So it was good for me. I didn't hate it. I wasn't locked into that commute.
Well, as a native of Northern California, I know there's this you know, Northern California, Southern California divide thing that happens, and people forget there are some very nice pockets in L.A., nice places to be. It's not all about being on freeways. And
well, I'll be very, very honest with you. I grew up in the Sunset District of San Francisco, which is a grid of housing that all looks the same, with no street trees or almost no street trees, and very little or in the way of amenities.
A lot of fog, too.
And a ton of fog, which I personally hate. But when I went to UCLA, I was struck by how beautiful. There were so many trees around, and things were, the weather was great. There was much more landscaping. I thought, why do people hate L.A.? So, you know, I'm not an L.A. hater, and I do think that that divide is pretty artificial.
Sure.
And I, you know, same way, I think the east-west divide in Petaluma is pretty artificial.
Well, it's funny. When I lived down in L.A., you know, I would talk to people about that. And a lot of people down there, they never would even talk about Northern California.
No.
There's so much there. So, yeah, I definitely noticed that there wasn't much of a concern against Northern California. Plus, they like getting the water, you know.
That's a whole other issue.
That's a whole other issue.
It is still not resolved.
It is.
And probably never will be.
So you say you're happy in Petaluma. You've been here a long time.
Yeah. Actually, when I moved here, I thought I would give it 18 months because I just had never not lived by the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the fog, I really did like living by the ocean.
Yeah.
And so I was very surprised at how Petaluma captivated me and kept me here.
It's a charming little town.
It's a great town. It's a really great town.
And what I think we had a conversation about it over email, just the fact that it's so easy to get into San Francisco for a little day trip to the museums or something. That's a nice thing. So it has a...
And it also has its own personality.
Exactly.
It's not just an adjunct of San Francisco.
Not at all.
It is very much its own place, mm-hmm. and that's what I really fell in love with.
And you've always lived on the west side?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so you've been living here for a while, and how many years into your living in Petaluma did you decide to get active in government?
Well, my interest first was in raising my family. I have two sons, and so my first volunteer work was involved with their schools. So I did get involved with site council and the supervisor's lay advisory committee, and then the PTA when my one son was in junior high school. And that was my first volunteer work. And I did work on a few campaigns when Sally Foley ran for school board against someone who wanted to take away the human interaction programs.
Whoa. When was that? What year
was
that? Oh, boy. I remember that well. It was Pearl Evans.
Person who was running was Arvid Shenoy.
Right, but he was appointed, and then he was running because they appointed him, but there was a woman named Pearl Evans that also ran, and they were both running to because of the human interaction class.
Yes.
And this was in the 1990s.
Yes.
Yeah.
In early 90s.
Early 90s.
So how far we've come.
Yeah. Right. And so that was a really, mm-hmm. that was like walking door to door and talking to people. And it meant so much to so many people. And Sally was the perfect candidate. She was just poised and knowledgeable and had good name recognition. And she went on to serve, I think,
at least two or three terms
there. So thank you.
Yeah. So was she, in a way, a sort of a mentor or inspiration?
No. Well, she was certainly an inspiration because she had three young children,
uh-huh.
and she wasn't looking for more things to do in her life, I
right.
don't believe. You know, she just felt that this was so important, it had to be tackled. And I think that so many people in our community admired her for doing that. And, it wasn't something that was on my mind about running for office, but I was really glad to help other people do it. And then eventually, after I sort of lost my interest in working on school issues, I joined the city government by volunteering to work on the tree advisory committee. And that's when, at the time when we were starting to do the plantings downtown,
mm-hmm.
and sort of the urban forest idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I was worked on that with Ross Parkerson.
That's
I don't
right.
know if we all remember
right.
Ross.
Who actually, I was just thinking of Ross because he moved up to Oregon.
Yes.
And I'm telling you, like 2 weeks ago, I was wondering about Ross Parkerson.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yes.
Is Petaluma known as Tree City USA?
We did have that designation for a number of years. There are things that you need to do in order to keep it, and
okay.
I do not believe we have been able to keep that up.
As
the staff was diminished during the downturn in 08,
mm-hmm.
we actually lost the ability to do that.
Well, it was actually back in, I think, 1994 election. There was Who Pays initiative on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also another ballot initiative, which was Washington First, and to do improvements, traffic improvements to Washington Street. And both of those ended up losing. But what we got out of that was the trees up and down Washington was one of the benefits that came with that. And some of that was, that's what Don Waxman had told me,
mm-hmm.
that that's how that came about. To beautify that corridor.
Mm-hmm.
So
we still have
an history
issue with one of the large redwood trees near the McNears,
correct? Is one of those dying or both of them? Or?
Well, there's been one that's been replaced, okay. And the other two we're still working on keeping.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just a difficult
environment.
This
is not the right climate for them.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was looking today on 101, and there are a lot of redwood trees that have died, and I'm just not sure if it's the exhaust from the cars.
No, well, that's certainly a big part of
it. It's the wrong climate. They're supposed to be closer to the coast.
Well, my redwood trees in my backyard are doing so well that I wish I would have never planted them, I will tell you.
Well, they need water.
Microclimate.
Right. We have definitely a microclimate with great birds in there.
So how long were you on the tree advisory committee before proceeding to planting?
I think I was only there from 97 to 99. And then in 99, there was an election that freed up two positions on the planning commission. And myself and David Glass were among the people who applied for that those seats, and we each got one. David got a 4-year position. I got a 2-year position. And so I really found something that I really loved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, planning was just the perfect fit for, I think, for my talents and interests.
I didn't even ask, what was your degree when you were in college? What did you
I got my
undergraduate.
Yes, I got my undergraduate degree in international relations, and I have my graduate degree in economic history, neither of which I have ever worked in.
Uh-huh.
But it does always remind me of the thinking globally, working locally, because it's not that I'm not interested in those things. It's just that I can affect them better at a local level than I can if I wanted to be in the State Department.
Very true.
And I wouldn't be getting paid if I were in the State Department right now, because I'd be furloughed, right?
Yeah, that's
big
problem.
Yeah, we have a lot of people in Petaluma that have been furloughed. This is not a good situation.
There's
this
an article about the Coast Guard families.
And the Coast Guard families. And
well, I just want to say that the city at least is trying to do its part by extending to federal employees in Petaluma who are affected by the furlough, not exactly dispensation, but the same kind of service that we provided to families that were affected by the fire, in that if they have bills that are due to Petaluma, and that most likely is the water and wastewater
bills.
But it also could be tiny tots or other services that they might be using with the city, we will delay any bills that are due from them and not charge them any fines or late fees.
Are there concerns about some federal funds that not get to our city because of this Trump shutdown?
You know, there may be. I'm not aware of that right now. This is that kind of a problem that just keeps growing every day. In the beginning, you think it's going to be solved right away, and then now we're seeing it be the intransigence coming in, and so we'll see.
Well, I don't think, you know, people really don't understand local government is affected by the state, the feds.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all tied together in this, and it all trickles down or goes up.
That's right.
It seems there's no end in sight with this shutdown. Maybe the plan is to just keep it shut down until there's no money for the Mueller probe. I don't know.
Well, I'm surprised they haven't shut that money down now.
Yeah. Anyway, we digress a little. But it's important because, local things impact national things impact local things. So you were on the Planning Commission for 6 years, and then I guess you mentioned that you had a little bit of frustration that kind of led to your decision to run for council the first time.
Well,
go into that a little bit.
I will, and in so doing, I will just back up a little to say that you are limited to 2 terms on the Planning Commission, and then you need to take a year off, and then you can reapply.
Oh, okay.
And so because I had filled half a term, and then I was reappointed for an entire term, I couldn't reapply for another term because I'd exceed those 2 terms.
Got it.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I had to take a year off.
Term limits.
Yes, term limits is on the Planning Commission.
Yes.
It is not on the City Council.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yes.
It's also on the Technology Advisory Committee.
I think it's time to start looking at that.
Yes.
Well, there's one guy that's been on there for quite a long time, and maybe it'd be good to give someone else a chance. without mentioning names. Yeah.
So I did
his
take...
last name begins with H.
So I did end up taking a year off, but I had been a little frustrated by decisions that would be made at the Planning Commission that would be overturned at the council, mm-hmm. Just because developers could count to four.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who volunteer their time to be on our committees and commissions put in a lot of time and effort.
It's volunteer.
Yes, it is volunteer. And it is, there's a lot to be read and studied about on mm-hmm. Planning Commission and Park and Rec. But you know, the Bike and Pedestrian Advisory Committee,
right.
You know, there's a number of Public Art Committee right now. You know, people are putting in lots and lots of hours, and they're doing it because they care about their community.
Yeah.
And to have their work dismissed by a council that just really isn't paying attention to their own codes and general plan and adopting policies that aren't in the long-term interest of our city really is very frustrating.
Yeah. And it's happened quite a few times where there's been planning commission decisions that have been essentially overturned.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's a tricky one. Sometimes there's a strong rationale to do it, I imagine. That's why the council has that power to do it.
Yes.
But it can be also incredibly demoralizing for someone who's working on a committee to do all this work and focus and have that expertise to suddenly have that work taken away.
Right, and nothing,
it's a balance.
No action, no, you know, you
it's
can't.
It's a fine balance.
Yeah, you
can't, it's a very fine balance.
You can't say that any overturning of a decision is always wrong.
Right.
But the rationale has to be very grounded.
Absolutely.
And that's what I was finding was not existing when I ran for council.
And it sounds like what you alluded to was that oftentimes it was influenced by developers being able to influence the council. And we've seen how that can happen in council races where you look at where the money's coming from and you look at certain candidates and then you can see what decisions they make. You know, it's sometimes not easy to prove an overt quid pro quo, but you know, between
I think what you end up seeing in the long term, because I know we're not going to talk about this, but my deal is really transportation.
Yeah.
And every time transportation was not looked at, and yet the developer just got to build their project, and they didn't have to look at the impacts.
Yeah.
And it was really unfortunate, and I think that's a good reason why we need to have term limits, because, you know, when you have term limits, then they ended up working for the developer anyway.
You know, it's interesting. I go back and forth on term limits. When it's someone I really like, I want them to stay as long as they want to. And the other thing, too, is you gain a lot of experience and expertise by being in a position for a while.
Yes.
So I typically haven't been in favor of term limits. I mean, there's always pros and cons.
Well, in many, many things, there are unintended consequences.
Yes, that's
and
right.
You cannot always tell what decisions will affect going into the future.
That's right.
And that certainly has been the case in California legislature, you know, with the Senate and the Assembly, where you now have a staff that is probably more informed than many of the actual electeds. And
well, maybe they should rotate and have the staff.
No, it's a real problem because when you have people that have the institutional knowledge, and, you know, like when I look at Petaluma, there's not a lot of institutional knowledge. And it really makes a difference. And at the, you know, the state, you know, when initiatives started, you know, are so popular.
Yeah.
And, you know, initiatives have basically taken the place of sometimes elected officials.
Yeah,
and it's a real problem.
It is a
problem. Yeah.
Yes. You end up with the, you know, gay marriage ban.
Well, yeah, there's a lot that, you know, you lose.
Like Prop 13.
Prop 13, that's going to be tackled, I'm telling you.
So you ran for council in 2006, and you served how many terms?
I've finished 3 terms as council member, and now I just am starting my first term as mayor.
Yeah. Wow. Well, congrats.
So how does it feel?
Congratulations on that.
It feels more different than I would have anticipated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We all know that we have a weak mare.
Exactly.
In Petaluma.
Not everybody knows that, actually.
Well,
and that can be a challenge.
Yes.
They look at you and they expect you to just be able to do whatever. And you're simply one vote on the council. But you do have the ability to sort of set agendas and run the meeting.
Well, you don't set the agenda, but you do run the meeting. But you are the public face of Petaluma for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And people do have, as you were just saying, the perception that you can affect things more, and they want you to do that.
Yeah.
And so they seek you out and really want to talk to you about things that you have no say.
Right.
You know, they want to hand you their resume and have you hire them
right.
For positions that are, A, not available, and, B, not yours to give.
That's interesting.
You know, so that, you know, that kind of a perception is different. There's also the idea that if you say something and you're the mayor, somehow that's directive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the same thing I was saying when I was the council member, and
right.
it's just my opinion, one of seven on the council.
Do you meet with the city managers? Well, we don't
well,
have
we don't
them right
have
now.
A city manager
and, you know,
right
hopefully
now.
We'll either be getting he or her one of these days.
The announcement is going out early next week.
Oh, great.
So,
great.
It'll be a very good announcement, I think. I feel very, very positive about it. And but Scott Broden, our interim city manager and our past and I hope future city manager, assistant
manager,
has been doing a great job.
That's good.
Doing a great
That's
job,
great.
And I do talk with him on occasion too. Yes.
So is John Brown officially gone? Is he still here during the transition?
He retired. He retired
okay.
in the end of November.
Okay.
And he's enjoying his life, I believe.
I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's challenging.
Well, it's going to be good. So when the new city manager comes in, does the mayor meet with the city manager more often than council members?
You know, I think that's up to the different. I don't know how often council members meet with the city manager. That's really up to each individual council member and the city manager. The city manager has a lot of time management issues they have to take into control account. And so, but because you have an office at City Hall, you know, you are much more likely to be interacting with them. And because things that are being sent to me that really are the area of the city manager, just by the nature of those things, you will be working more closely.
That's what that's my observation. And with David Glass, that was the same. And I think it's really important that our mayor actually have conversations directly with the city manager on a regular basis and go over things. I don't like to look at it as a weak mayor. I like to look at it as that you're strong and you're working closely, and that the council actually works close with the mayor, and that you actually help disseminate information instead of things going in 10 different directions, or I should say 6 different directions.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with that. Yes. I do think that our council has an opportunity to work very closely together.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got a clear indication in the last election.
Yes, we did.
Yes, I think
that,
we did.
That the city has different expectations.
Yes.
And I can't believe anybody who is on the council isn't aware of that.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see when the votes start coming in.
Well, just to step back a little bit, you've run a few times for council and now for mayor. What were some of the main differences in your experience in running for council versus mayor?
Oh, well, the primary difference is that in this past election, I had more support from people who wanted to volunteer at any level that they could possibly volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
I had more people sending me money because they wanted to make sure that I won.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just astonished at how much support was out there. And while I would like to personally take credit for that, I really have to realize that it is in large part about the climate in our country right now,
mm-hmm.
that people feel very, very frustrated, very disempowered,
mm-hmm.
and they want to have some power. Right. And so when this election came by, you know, we see it. It's not just my election. All over, people were volunteering and going to different jurisdictions in order to help get the vote out where that vote really mattered.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the beneficiary of that, and I'm very grateful for that. But, you know, we also saw unprecedented external money.
That was crazy. I mean, we get these flyers coming to our house, and they say they're for your opponent and another candidate that was running.
Two opponents. They actually backed two people for one position, which...
just to split the vote against
Well, it can't give you any other view except that we want anybody but Teresa.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was very eye-opening, and I think it truly backfired. I think that people in the community were outraged by oil companies spending $78,000.
Unbelievable.
And then there's
still... probably unprecedented in Petaluma.
It was not unprecedented. It wasn't unprecedented in California.
No, but in Petaluma.
Maybe not up to that kind of number, there's definitely money put into campaigns. But other jurisdictions, Benicia and places in the valley... Yeah. Candidates were also, big oil, were sending the same flyers out against other people. And a lot of them were on the Air District.
Wasn't that the point? They were targeting people that...
were on the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. That was certainly the point with me.
Mm-hmm.
They also supported a member of the Bay Area Air Quality Management District Solano County who lost because of their support.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Why do you think they supported that person?
Because I think he was more in line with their issue, concerns.
So what are they concerned about? They're concerned about regulations for their emissions?
The Bay Area Air Quality Management District oversees the 5 refineries in the 9 Bay Area counties.
Mm-hmm.
And so their emissions are under our jurisdiction.
Got it.
And we are concerned about what that is because we are the most progressive air district in the country. There's a South Coast air district in the southern part of the state, and there are other air districts in other regions of the country.
That's one good reason to be in Northern California versus Southern California.
Right, but, you know, that is true, but, you know, we have all started to see air quality diminish because as the economy has gotten stronger, more people are driving, there's more production, and we are seeing degradation in our air quality.
And the fires don't help.
Well, the fires don't help either, but we actually need to take stronger stands on things. The climate issue is a huge issue. It is the issue.
We've got maybe 10 years to cut it in half or more. We have to cut our GHGs. Or it's a runaway train. That's what the scientists are saying.
Well, we in Sonoma County and actually all throughout the Bay Area have taken pledges to get our greenhouse gas emissions down to 80% of 1990 standards by next year. We're not there. And we need to get there soon because we're not, you know, we don't have 10 years.
No.
I think, you know, we have so many more people coming in. You know, I look at the roads, and how many more people are on the freeway. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to 3 lanes, and it's going to be just as clogged. And then, you know, for over 10 years, we've been driving up to Davis when our daughter was a student there, and then they ended up staying there. It would take me 1 hour from our door to their door to get to their family housing. And today, it takes me about an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just on any day of the week. And when they, you know, there's just so many roads in our area that need to be expanded for the traffic. But when you're going to expand it, you're just going to have more and more cars and more people moving in.
Transportation is one of those problems that you cannot build your way out of.
You can't build your way out of it.
You have
absolutely
to use a different technology.
Yeah. Right.
And that is what we are absolutely needing to do, and that has to be public transportation
mass
transportation.
Absolutely. I mean, you're looking at the SMART train already, where people are using it, but, you know, I like to always go over to Solano County, you know, the 5 counties that can't figure out what to do with Highway 37, because transportation is something I do follow, and, you know, you have all these problems. Well, wouldn't it be great if we could get the train that goes to Emeryville, Sacramento, to go, you know, 37 or a route somehow to hit into Sonoma County. The tracks are there. How can we do this? And I just hate the fact that we're going to be continuing building more and more roads and we can't build our way out of congestion.
Well, a big challenge, too, is that a lot of people have jobs that are in the city, but they can't afford to live in the city.
People are living in Sacramento.
Or even here, commuting from Petaluma into San Francisco.
But people, when I was growing up here, people started moving to the east side because many of them lived in San Francisco, and they were military people, so they commuted to San Francisco. And so, you know, you're seeing the same thing, but people are now moving to Sacramento, Fairfield, Vacaville, because they can afford it.
Sure.
So they're not coming here for affordability to get San Francisco anymore. They're actually going to other areas, and they are they're driving in because they don't have any other choices.
Well, Sacramento can get on the train and get to San Francisco.
Yeah. That is true. And, I mean, and the train does move. I mean, I see it.
Honestly, it's like a lot of things in life. There are other options, but they're less convenient.
Well, and we need to make them more convenient and more affordable.
Well, that's the thing. And financing is important. Public financing is a value.
I mean, I will say, having lived in Europe for 2 years, it felt like I was going backwards when I came back to the U.S. in terms of the state of our mass transit
system. I have a niece and nephew that just moved to Amsterdam.
That's a great. That's where I live.
Well, they're going to be there for 2 years or 3 years. He works for Lyft.
Yeah.
And so he transfers to San Francisco.
He won't need his car there.
Well, his wife and their 2-year-old child lives there, a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And so she now has a bike.
Yeah.
And the strange thing is, she just wrote this the other day on Facebook, they don't use helmets there. So it's
really
odd.
Some are starting to.
I just read this two days ago. They're not using helmets.
To bring this back to...
It depends. I mean, I go there every year.
But the point is that when she lived in San Francisco, her transportation was different than it is over there.
Yeah.
And, boy, it would be great to bring that here.
The thing that makes it safer for bicyclists there is they have an infrastructure that supports bikes.
That's true.
So there's fewer accidents. And so people feel safer. So, and who wants to wear a helmet? They're not as comfortable and everything. So, yeah, fewer people do wear them. When I lived there, no one wore them. Now when I go back, I see a few people, but most people don't. And they have the clunky old bicycles. It's also all flat.
Right.
No hills.
But Jason, you know, we have that opportunity here.
We do.
And that's part of the bike trail and walking, the multi-use trail.
Absolutely.
It should go along the smart train.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Which we were promised.
It absolutely has to happen.
Yeah.
And it is what we not only promised, but it's what we voted for.
It's in the plan.
Yeah.
And it is, as I mentioned, I was just in L.A. L.A. has a dedicated Class 1 two-way bike lane plus a walking lane right next to it from the ocean all the way to downtown Los Angeles.
That's pretty good.
That's right.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
And it can happen here.
And
it has to happen.
They have a pretty good subway in L.A. too now.
Well, and it goes along the light rail train, and that goes part of it becomes a subway.
Well, up in Davis by the park, there's this one road that they have closed off, and it's going to be for bikes, and you come directly from the campus and just go down, and you hit right by the park. The downtown park. I mean, that's what we should be.
So I remember back on the council, there were some development issues that came up where many people on the council felt that the developer should be putting in bike paths and things. My understanding was it didn't actually turn out.
Well, hopefully, with the new council, we'll be looking at bike paths.
Is it safe to say that's a big goal that you have, is to improve our bike infrastructure?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to KPCA, Low Power FM, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM.
Yeah, we want to start talking about the Women's March.
We are going to get to the Women's March. Yes, we are. We've got something coming. You've got me off of the bike thing. But suffice to say, we need to reduce GHGs. There was a recent article that I just saw in the paper, editorial from John Burns, that echoed that sentiment. I was delighted to see him say that because in the past he hasn't seemed to have been as concerned about supporting traffic-inducing development. So that
retirement
was,
must
was a good evolution.
At least on your mind.
I think we take support wherever we can.
Yeah, and it's
exactly.
good. But it's vindication to progressives that were saying what we need to be doing quite a while ago. I'm glad we're now in a better situation in that regard. People are waking up.
So we have a very important thing coming up, and is it tomorrow or is it Sunday?
Saturday. It's tomorrow at 11 o'clock. I think you're talking about the Women's March.
We are talking about the Women's March, and I understand you're actually going to be involved with that.
Yes, I am a speaker for the Women's March that will be in Petaluma, and I think we're all very excited to have one locally.
Oh.
Many of us had gone, pardon me, to Washington from Petaluma.
Did you go to
people? No, I did not.
I went to San Francisco and
went to
Santa Rosa.
Some people went to San Francisco,
Sacramento,
and Oakland. You know, where they had hundreds of thousands of people. And I think last year the idea was to make it more local, so people did not have to travel so far,
mm-hmm.
and that local communities would also see that. So this year Petaluma is going to be part of that.
It's also better for reducing GHGs to do it locally.
That is absolutely correct.
And traffic.
That's correct. And we have a group that has put this march together with a very diverse group of speakers.
Mm-hmm.
We will be meeting starting at 11 a.m. at Walnut Park,
mm-hmm.
and near the gazebo. So mm-hmm. that will be where you can find everybody, but I don't think that will be an issue. And the program will include an introduction, and then the speakers will talk. And the speakers are including people from the North Bay LGBTQI families,
mm-hmm.
of Sonoma, Marin, and Napa County. The MC is Marjorie Crump Shears, who is a former Sonoma County Human Rights Commissioner. Then myself and Delinda Fisher, who was also elected to the Petaluma City Council, will speak as city council members. And then we have three people will be speaking from the Petaluma School Board.
Uh-huh.
We'll have Maddie Cloud and Joanna Pond and Caitlin Quinn, all the newly elected people to the Petaluma City School District.
That's great.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's all five of my favorites.
Obviously, all women speakers. It makes
sense.
It
is all, it is people of fluid gender.
Okay. So, I misspoke.
That's okay. That's okay. But
not.
There are other people that will be speaking as well that I haven't named all of them. Yes, there are.
But men can participate in the march.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good. Yes. And that's what will follow the speech is the speaking is the march that will just go around pretty much the same route as the Butter and Egg Day Parade.
Oh, great.
And then end up at the Walnut Park again.
So this is a big deal. They're going to close off the street. And
I've not been involved in the planning of that, so I'm not sure.
There's two different routes.
One
is if it's under 500, it'll be a little bit shorter, but if it's 500, then they're going to go ahead like the Butter and Egg Day Parade.
Are you involved in organizing it?
I am not involved in organizing it, no.
Okay, but you're going to participate.
I will participate, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, that's great. So,
I hope just about everybody in town comes out and participates because I really do think that we need to continue to empower women
absolutely.
In particular. It's not like things have changed since 2017 when Donald Trump became president.
No, it hasn't.
And we just constantly are seeing things that get disclosed that have been ongoing for so long. So I just think that fight needs to continue and our support needs to be with the underrepresented people in our community.
Well, I think it's interesting how the marches from the 60s till now, the changes, you know, of who's participating, the direction that we're going to be going. Yeah. It's definitely multicultural.
There is another woman who serves on the council, Kathy Miller. Was she not interested in doing it, or is she going to be in?
I'm not certain she was invited,
okay.
I don't think that that has anything to do with Kathy's unwillingness to go.
Sure.
I think that there was a certain, first of all, they had to limit the number of people who were speaking, and I think there was a desire to have people who represent particular interests be among the speakers.
Yeah, that makes sense. Good. Well, I'm glad that you're involved in that, and I'm sure that
leaders of the march are happy to have our mayor actually speaking at it. That's going to be great.
And I think they're happy that it's a woman who's a mayor.
Absolutely.
So too.
Yeah, no, we're very happy about that.
Well, I listened to a podcast, and I was listening to The Daily today. And I really encourage people to get on the on these podcasts because, you know, you learn so much. And today was talking about the, you know, women's marches from the past and to today, so giving some history. It's important that, you know, young people read about, you know, why women marched, you know, starting, you know, from the early 1900s and why we're still marching today. And many of the things that we're marching for are some of the same things that we've been marching for almost 100 years. You know, women's rights, birth control.
People take it for granted sometimes until the rights get pulled away.
Exactly.
And we do need to be vigilant because there are a lot of people still that want to control the women's right to choose, for example.
Well, this went back to, you know, the school board. When Teresa, you know, worked for a candidate to get her on.
Suffice to say, we probably won't have a lot of Trump supporters at this rally.
I would be surprised. I would be surprised. You know, as I said, there's, you know, we're going to have other members of the community Commission on Human Rights will be there. We will have Casa Grande High School student leaders there. You know, we will just have people from all different areas. A Jewish spiritual leader will be there. Teachers and just advocates from psychotherapists, playwrights,
and
will all be speaking.
And how long does it go on? What's the duration?
I think the speeches are about 40 minutes, and then I think the I think
everybody gets 2 minutes to speak.
Two or three minutes,
and then it's still three.
And the speaking is at the beginning of the
march? Yes. We will come back to the Walnut Park at the end, and there will be people have been invited to be tabling there so that there is community outreach and people can talk to different groups who may not have been speaking but may also want to be part of that.
So what's the weather going to be like?
I think it's going to be cloudy, but I don't believe it's going to rain.
No, I think it'll be just fine. And it's going to happen one way or another.
Yeah.
And
bring an umbrella if you need.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, no, the year before it rained, because I was in Santa Rosa and I had my raincoat on and it was raining.
So so now that you're on mayor, you've been on the council. Now that you're mayor and you're working with the other council members, some of whom didn't support you when you ran for mayor, how is that relationship unfolding now?
I think it's just fine. Good. You know, everybody has the right to support who they want to, but, you know, when you are on the council, you all need to work together. And I think we've done that in the past, and I expect we will continue to do that, and I look forward to that.
I think, and it goes back to, I mean, I think the public really spoke.
Yeah.
That they wanted a more diverse council.
Yes.
They want the council to work together and not, you know, like a 5-2. They want things done.
Well, I think it was
and
also
people working together.
A smart growth vote, too. I think a lot of people realized that, I mean, that was part of your message when you were running, is that the decisions of past councils have left us in a situation where we have some development that isn't quite necessarily the best for our city. And
well, it's not really filling the needs that we have in terms of housing. You know, the kind of housing we build is not the kind of housing we need.
No.
And it doesn't feed our residents, and it doesn't feed our businesses who are having a difficult time finding people who can afford to live in Petaluma.
And so you talked a lot about transit-oriented development, and so I imagine that's going to be a big priority for you.
Well, I think we have an opportunity to meet that, particularly in the area right down by the SMART station.
And the Central Pacific Plan you're talking about.
Yes, and I'm talking about the downtown SMART station as well.
Yeah.
But also there's the potential for North Petaluma Station over at Corona and McDowell.
Right.
And I'm very, very interested in us pursuing that.
How is that looking? Because it's been going back and forth, it seems.
I believe they're in litigation with the developer is in litigation with the SMART board or the SMART SMART, and so that has to be settled in the courts.
Okay.
But I certainly hope whatever settlement is made, it benefits Petaluma because we need another train station.
Yes.
to feed our to fill our needs.
Because right now, I imagine people that live in the north section of town are driving to catch the SMART, and then they're parking issues, I imagine.
Yeah, or not.
Yeah, yeah, or they're not. Or they're not. Yes, one, yes. Yeah. And we do need to get more people there, and we need to service our entire community.
Do we? I don't have any numbers. Do you have a sense of the success of SMART in terms of the ridership?
It's been much more successful than anticipated.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, there were just some new numbers that came out. I don't have them. Just like there were just some new numbers that said that.
People
yeah, absolutely.
Because I know a lot of people who were against it. Actually, I don't know very many people who are against it, but some of the people I did talk to said that they didn't think that the ridership was happening or was going
well,
to
it
happen.
Appears that it is happening. The only concern that I have heard about the ridership is that it does tend to be older users, and so the question of opening it up to younger users, getting it to meet students' needs, is really important. And if we have that North station, that would really help kids who go to Santa Rosa Junior College here in Petaluma, and you know up to Santa Rosa Junior College in Santa Rosa as well. So or Sonoma State. I mean, you can get to any of those.
Yeah.
And so we really need to find ways to make sure those kids can afford to use that.
So when you're talking older, we're talking about commuters, or are we just talking about...
No, I'm talking about retired people.
Right, just taking the train because
yes.
they're going somewhere. And that's great, but we also want to get people off the road.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, those people are
getting...
We're getting those people off the road because they're taking
that's
the
true.
Train. But we need to get more people
right.
off the road.
Yes.
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lots
exactly.
to do.
And we're finding out that millennials and Gen Z people are much less likely to be getting their driver's license. They want to use public transportation.
Very true.
Also seeing a lot more EVs on the road. So
yes, indeed.
You're listening to KPCA-LP, Petaluma, California. This is 103.3. We have Mayor Teresa Barrett with us, and we're kind of starting to wind down. Real quick, just one last thing. I mean, if there was one single big issue that is facing the council right now, what would it be? And if you have any thoughts on it.
Well, I actually think that the big issue is not just facing the council, but it's facing all of us,
yes.
and that is the climate issue.
Okay.
And I think that that needs to be the bottom line of how we're looking at everything we are doing.
Yeah.
So as we're addressing our housing issues, we need to look at that.
I will say this is, I mean, I've been here my whole life. I have never seen pollution like I have seen in the last 3 years.
Oh.
And ever. And it reminds me of L.A. when I was a kid and went and visited friends. And that's what's fearful.
All right. Well, big issue. Lots to do. We thank you so much, Mayor Teresa Barrett, for coming on. You've been listening to Inside Petaluma on KPCA-LP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. You can go to InsidePetaluma.com to hear this show because we'll be archiving it there. And there's another show coming up, so stay tuned, and we will be saying goodbye for now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you, Teresa.
Thank you all.
So much. Bye-bye.